podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Get all the latest football headlines and bite-sized opinion in the brand new Whistleblowers Daily Podcast. Join Mark Smith, Martin Grutten and a conveyor belt of guests as they dissect all the biggest stories in one small, perfectly formed package. Take 5 to 10 minutes out of your day to stay up to date with everything that matters in football. Whether it's a big result from the night before, a new excuse from Jurgen Klopp, a shocker of a VAR decision, or a new chapter in the ongoing Man United soap opera, we will cover it. All the latest news, every weekday lunchtime, on the Whistleblowers Daily Podcast. Look for the Whistleblowers wherever you get your podcasts. Well, hello, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good the middle of the night, wherever you are in the world. This is Theo Delaney saying welcome to another Spurs show from North London. Exciting times. We're all just getting our breath back here. I've got three great guests who will bring their wisdom to try and explain yesterday's proceedings in West London, all of whom are seasoned Spurs show guests. Hello again, Dominic Powell.
Hi there, guys.
How are you?
Yes, very good. Yeah, after a 96-minute equaliser, that certainly perks you up.
It does. It does. Carl Jones, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, Theo. Yeah, similar to Dominic, really. It's just sort of still recovering from yesterday, but enjoyed it.
Yeah, brilliant. And Simon Dent, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, same. I was very lucky to be there. I think a couple of the guys were there as well. So, yeah, quite... My body is recovering. I'm trying to rehydrate. And sort of generally, I feel like I've been around 12 rounds of Mike Tyson, to be honest.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was, I wasn't there, but I watched it on the TV. I watched it with my good friend Rob White, often a guest on here, of course, a couple of other people. And my God, it was exhausting enough. But to be there, I know, Simon, you've been to many, many hundreds of it. You're one of those people who's been to a hell of a lot of away games. This one will stick out as one of the more memorable, won't it?
Very much so. I mean, probably only for the last minute, though, if I'm perfectly honest, and maybe the first minute, which was quite encouraging. But I think everything in between was very familiar at Stamford Bridge. It was quite a strange sort of day. I feel like it was a bad nightmare in what is otherwise a really exciting time at Tottenham. It was just a flashback to reality and normality. So, yeah, but look, you can't beat a last minute equaliser, especially at Chelsea. And there were really, really encouraging signs. And I think, you know, whether we'll get into the sort of game itself. But I think, there was a bit of sort of, well, quite a lot of moaning, obviously, about the performance. But look, a point to point and they're a very good team.
Yeah. Dominic, were you there or did you watch on the TV?
No, I was there, yes, in the shed upper, right above the goal.
Right.
And yeah, it was looking like it might go the way that it had gone over there many times before.
Yeah.
But it turned out right in the end, at the very end.
Yeah, I mean, the strange thing about it was I've been there many times for games where we played really well and been well worth the point, or arguably even, you know, not that often, but occasionally we've gone there and been the better side and ended up losing. So, and then this time we did predictions last week like we do on the on the pod. And I said, I reckon it'll be a draw, but I reckon we'll be a bit disgruntled because I reckon we'll be the better team. I expected us to be the better team. Form and various things suggested we would be. And yet, the opposite happened. It was a draw, but they were, without doubt, I'm afraid to say, the better team. Carl, does it worry you that we were outplayed for most of the 90 minutes?
I'd say I was probably disappointed. I expected a little bit more from the performance. That said, you know, as the guys have already touched on, how many times have we gone to Chelsea, played well, come away with nothing? You know, there's the only thing that's better than absolutely humiliating your rivals like we did to Arsenal in May is coming away with an undeserved result in controversial circumstances. And I've been drinking those salty tears for most of the day. So I think that sort of, for me, I would have liked to have seen us turn up. I would have liked to have seen us play them off the park. As it happened, we didn't play particularly well. I think we were maybe a little bit out thought for certainly the first half and period of the second. And And we hung on in there, which we're beginning to see more and more with Conte's Tottenham. And that, for me, I think is the big takeaway. I feel like that resilience now. I don't feel, even when we were trailing both times, I never felt that we couldn't get something out of it. I still felt like there was still going to be that chance, even though we were outplayed for such long periods.
Well, that was the weird thing about it. We didn't play particularly well. They definitely had the lion's share of everything, apart from, if you look at the basic stats, shots on target, tellingly, because if their deficiencies are mostly, they think, anyway, if you speak to their fans, is they're a bit light at the back in terms of personnel. I mean, their players playing out of position. Reece James was playing in the back three, and they had Loftus-Cheek playing at wing-back. But it didn't seem to affect them. I mean, that Reece James is one hell of a player, isn't he? I mean, he's slotted in there no problem at all. I mean, he is a really good player. As Romero identified that and targeted him with some of his shithousing. But, I mean, the weird thing was, even though we weren't playing well, we're being outplayed, yeah, you still thought, yeah, but I don't know, I think we can get something here. And that is a strange state of affairs. But I'd like to know, you know, we've got a really good team. The manager's been there a while. He's built a good squad. He has, you know, he is regarded as one of the great tactical, you know, great tacticians. One of the top handful of managers in the world, which it should be said so is theirs. Their manager's regarded that way. And yet we were outplayed. So putting the grit and everything aside, which I do agree is a fantastic thing to see, and we never doubted that aspect of it, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing. It's all too rare in our many years of watching Spurs. But why? And is it a worry? Because, Simon, you know, they matched us up system-wise, but they found a way to dominate. I mean, I know they're at home, but really, you know, it's a worry that they were able to get a hold of us like that. What do you put it down to?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think one of the telling signs for me at the start was that they played three new signings and we kept three new signings on the bench. And I think that, for me, the whole point with early summer signings is obviously getting Bedham in, get him in the pre-seasons, and then you play him in the first games. And I thought, you know, maybe there's been a few niggles and that sort of thing. But I think that, well, they kind of that many niggles because they all came on. So that was quite surprising in the first place. And then linked to that is that when they all came on, the team got a lot better. So I found it quite interesting that, I mean, everyone around me was adamant that we should have at least two changes at half time. But then we didn't make two changes and then we scored and then we made changes and got better. So it kind of shows, you know, what do we know as fans and pundits? I mean, everyone expects us to go there and get a point. Even Chelsea fans were predicting the worst. So everyone was wrong. But I think with regard to the actual performance, look, I don't buy into this sort of, you know, the bogey team thing, really. I think we started well. I mean, it was literally about 3 minutes. We were at it. And I thought, hold on a second, this is the new Tottenham that we all signed up for. And then a few things don't go your way. I think that bloody water break after we scored really knackered us, because I think for 15 minutes before the equaliser, we were having a real go, and then we scored and then we stopped for 5 minutes and it went quiet and then the game just started. And I thought, well, hold on a second, this is, you know, that's really helped them out. But look, I think, yeah, with regards to performances, a few people weren't at it. Well, most people weren't at it, but the great thing we've got now is confidence, because we've got a strong bench. And I think that belief we all had came from the fact that we knew that we could bring on three world-class players.
Yeah, so that was a good thing. I you're right about the drinks break, because, you know, once you've scored, once you've equalised and you've sapped them of all that, they think, oh, we've outplayed them for an hour and we're not even winning. You expect to be the team with the momentum, and the opposite happened. And I guess it was the drinks break that snuffed that out, because it's the sort of thing, when you do get the momentum in a game, sometimes the other team, you know, feigns an injury just to take the sting out of it. And they didn't need to there with the...
Because, I mean, they probably needed a drink, to be fair to them.
Yeah, yeah, it was very, very hot, as you all know better than me, having been there. But I think I was disappointed how Chelsea immediately seized the initiative after we'd equalised and actually could have scored. I mean, the thing is, we're talking, one thing's for sure, they've had a lot of chances. And I think, as I say, their fans feel like they're lacking a finisher, and they didn't half miss some chances. All of our shots, I think we had 5 shots and they were all on target. They had about 16 shots and only 3 or 4 were on target, which tells you quite a lot, I think. But one of the things that struck me watching on the TV, and I don't know if it was the same, Dominic, in real life, as it were, we looked a bit sluggish. I felt we looked a bit tired right from the off. I mean, and then you start thinking, well, you know, the heat and all that, but we were playing on the same pitch in the same conditions.
Certainly. I think that we weren't offering much. Nobody from midfield was offering to come and take the ball from the back four, and we were trying the same thing over and over again. Giving it out to Dyer. Dyer was giving it to Davis. Sessegnon wasn't as lively as he had been last week. And then quite often the ball was going back to Dyer again. And then it was either do the same thing we've just done again or try and punt it forward. And we weren't looking to make the runs. Sonny wasn't making the runs that he's made before. Kane did look very, very tired. And I've noticed that he often doesn't, even for England, doesn't play particularly well when it is very, very hot. And it seemed as though after the initial three or four minute spell very early on, once Chelsea had got the momentum, we just couldn't wrest it back from them.
It's interesting you say that about Kane, because suddenly certain things start to make sense. The old legend of Kane never scores in August. That's when it's hot. and now we're looking at a World Cup in bloody Qatar. I mean, it could be a total non-event out there if that's anything to go by. But I mean, I thought Bentancur definitely looked sluggish. I thought he was particularly disappointed, but I didn't think anyone had a great first. I tell you who continues to confound us all, I think, is Emerson Royale. Don't you think? He week after week. I mean, I think most of us by two-thirds of the way, not so much. I mean, I find him very endearing. There's something about him that is very, very likeable. But I think by halfway through last season, most people had written him off as quite simply not good enough. And when he got back in the team after Doherty got injured at the end of last season, amazingly, we're all expecting him to have the nightmare is coming, and he was consistently good, and he's in the team there and starting. And in that first half, where you really needed players to be digging in, really digging in and putting in a shift, as some of them did look off the pace, he didn't, I felt. But did you think... go on.
Yeah, I think that one good thing with him is I think he's very confident, and if he tries something or he goes forward and doesn't beat the man or puts a cross in and it doesn't work, he doesn't hide and he still wants the ball the next time and he'll either try the same thing or try something else. I think his confidence isn't easily knocked and he keeps going.
Yeah. One of the things about... Go on.
Sorry, I was going to say they're just such important positions, though, in the way that Conte wants to play, the way that everyone wants to play. And I think having cover and, you know, your Doherty's and your Sessegnon's, we're collecting them, but I don't think we've collected any world-class players in
wing-backs.
And it's so pivotal. And look, I think he can defend, but I just don't think he can cross a ball. Well, that's a bit harsh. I don't think it's his strength crossing, and I don't think attacking is his crossing, whereas that position, it needs to be. I mean, Sessegnon obviously was pulled off yesterday. I think he had a chance, I think, at the end of the first half if he had scored, that would be 2-2 games for him, and that may have really changed, but instead, it didn't quite work out. Mendy saved it, and then he was taken off. So, I think they are the positions we need to strengthen, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to think that Perisic would be at his best, if he's going to get to his best, would be close to, you know, top level in that position. I noticed yesterday how right-footed he was, and he's been absolutely only spoken of as a left-footed wing-back, but it shows that he could play on either side. Lucas Moura, of course, came on, and like you said, Simon, Royal's not great in the attacking third, and so he brought on a guy who's better in the attacking third, but obviously slightly less of a proficient and experienced defender. One thing that I loved, at the end, when we did equalise, you look at Richarlison and Bissouma, the way they celebrated, it's as if they'd been there all their lives. It was as if it was their club that they'd been born into. It was incredible, wasn't it? I mean, that sort of spirit is, I think... You know, they say when you buy players, you've got to look at how they play and what their technical ability is and all of the football stuff, but you've got to look into their personalities. It's almost as if Conte wants that kind of personality in the group. I mean, Bissouma was the one doing the cheerleading at the end, wasn't he, Carl?
Yeah. He'd taken his shirt off to throw it into the crowd, and he was really, he was doing that thing that Klopp does, winding up the crowd for a cheer and did three big cheers.
Yeah.
Which, and you, I thought, blimey, he's only played 20 minutes for us.
Yeah, exactly. Also, I must say, I thought he looked outstanding when he came on. Mm. I mean, I don't know. I was not that surprised that he didn't change it yesterday because they'd been so good the other week. And there's always that thing that managers do about, you know, not dropping players when you've had a massive result. You think it's almost unfair. But I do wonder if Bissouma... Well, I think those three, you know, Bissouma, Højbjerg and Bentancur are all good. And if they rotate, that's fine. And Skip may well enter into that.
I think that just on that word dropping, I think we've just got to change that as a club now. I think it's all about rotation, isn't it? And I think just going back to Perisic, you mentioned about his feet. Like, we finally found a corner taker after 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, goodness, that corner for the winning goal, he took it with his weak. He took it with his left foot, didn't he?
Yeah. I noticed that he was taking free kicks and corners, depending on which side, sometimes with his left and sometimes... Yeah.
The Lamella and Eriksen days of corners. Like, I feel like he should play just because he can get a ball into the box.
Yeah, actually, before he came on, it was Son, and Son's not as good, that's for sure, at that thing. He's good at lots of things. Mind you, Son hasn't got going yet, has he? He looks a bit like he's another one who doesn't fancy August. I keep thinking of them throwing up on the pitch and thinking, has he overdone it there with the old making a meal? Maybe they're knackered already. I would be. But... I think overall, like, I think the really big positive take, of course, is the grit, the determination, the stickability, all of that stuff. And of course, we don't have to play teams like Chelsea every week. If we can get a point away at Chelsea, Man City, and Liverpool, and give them a right good go at home, we'll be fine. You know, in theory, we'll be right up there, no question about it. What did you make of the managerial spat, Carl?
I mean, I'll be honest, I enjoyed it. I think it's great to see. I think you want to sort of see that little bit of bite. I think Conte's put on his Instagram today of saying he didn't see Tuchel run past him and said he'd have put his leg out to trip him up. I mean, it seems to be a little bit sort of banter between the two of them. Obviously, there's quite a bit of competition there. But, you know, Conte is used to winning, as he says, and it was a pretty humbling experience, I think, those three games against Chelsea at the beginning of this year. And he didn't like that. And you know, those tensions were kind of building up. And you know, that's what you want to see. That fight, that grit, that determination. You know, how long have Tottenham been seen as pushovers? We out shit house Chelsea, you know, and they are the team that do that and have done that to us so many times. I really sort of enjoyed that. I mean, Tuchel is a hypocrite because obviously I think his issue at the end was that he wasn't looking him in the eyes, and there's a picture kind of surfaced that he did exactly the same thing to Sean Dyche, you know, not too long ago. So I think it's like Formula One where you get the fastest lap. There should be like a UFC round between the managers at the press conference, and we would pick up points all over the place.
Yeah. You got to say that Tuchel was very lucky. Sure, he didn't get into a spat with Sean Dyche, because if Sean Dyche, crikey, there's only one winner there. But I mean, obviously Conte is sophisticated in many ways. You know, he's an urbane kind of well-dressed sort of very, very sophisticated coach. And at the same time, he's an absolute scrapper. He's almost an animal. And he keeps doing that thing. I think he said it again yesterday, although he put the proviso in this time. But you know that speech where he says, in the game, you have to kill your opponent or your opponent will kill you. This time he said it. And then he said, in a sporting way, of course. But that's how he sees it. You've got to kill or be killed. And that seems to be manifested in what the team does, but also even in himself. I mean, all great organisations, the leader, the personality of the leader, not all great organisations, all organisations, good and bad, the leader's personality will often permeate, you know, the ranks, won't it? And that's what seems... I mean, I think of someone like dear old Nuno. This time last year, we've got our heads... Well, we haven't yet got our heads in our hands this time last year because we're winning the first three games. But you look at him, he seemed like a good coach. There's evidence to suggest he knew what he was doing tactics-wise and everything. He'd had a very, very successful time at Wolves. But he had none of that about him whatsoever, did he? He had no presence on the touchline. He didn't exude any kind of psychotic, ruthless desire to win at all costs.
I read earlier, Theo, that there's actually, you know, the games where we've picked up points seem to be also games where Conte has got into the opposing manager's head a little bit with Arteta. It happened with Guardiola. Klopp, was pretty, whatever the opposite of magnanimous is anyway, again, when we got that point against them. Yeah. So I do think that, you know, it's maybe come on a little bit since the old Fergie Keegan days of mind games, but it's almost a slightly more sophisticated approach. I do think that Conte is doing the business for us off the pitch in terms of getting into the opposing manager's heads. And let's face it, in that first half, I think that actually the Loftus-Cheek kind of right wing back, he was kind of the player that seemed to be coming into the midfield and helping them overrun us at periods. And Bentancourt and Højbjerg, particularly by the end, they looked like they were on their last legs. And if you see how they're dragged out of position when for the James goal, for the Chelsea second goal, I just think that Conte is even when he's outthought and outfought a little bit, he's still finding that extra bit. And I felt like at halftime they were going to go in and get you know, the right act read to them, and they were going to come out better, and they did.
Yeah, I think the other thing with Conte is that he sometimes looks like a wild animal on the touchline going crazy, but it's as though on the outside he's like that, but on the inside his brain is still very calm, very analytical, and he makes the right changes at the right time. And he's got the perfect mixture of both.
That's exactly the point I was about to make, though, about if the players can do the same. Because I think we go back to the Battle of the Bridge, and my God, we really screwed that night up, didn't we? And I think there were moments yesterday where it was on such a sort of fine line, whether it was the Romero hair pull or, you know, Kulusevski could have gone at one stage. There were a couple of loose Bentancur. There was just a lot happening where we got the rubber of the green, without doubt. And if they'd gone the other way, it would have been another quite embarrassing meltdown. So it's about, I suppose, Conte teaching the players to sort of just really navigate that fine line of the shithousery and the aggression, but not getting sent off, basically.
Yeah. All right, well, let's take a quick break and then we'll talk about wider, more general issues. And we are back. So, before we continue, I should tell you that for premium content, including a daily news show, ex-player interviews and original documentary series on Spurs, you can go to patreon.com/Spurs show and support our show in the process. Our monthly London live show returns next month. You can sign up and join us at season.spursshow.net. That gets you a season ticket, gets two people in each show. I can't remember how much it is, but it's very little. It's like a tenner a month, maybe a bit more. I can't remember exactly, but it's a negligible amount. And those evenings are great. It's just that, you know, it's quite intimate and we have great guests coming up as well. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. Please leave a nice review on iTunes with 5 stars. That really, really helps. There's merchandise available, by the way. Brand new Celebrity Spurs T-shirts. There's Heung-Min Son. There's Antonio Conte design. There's the old Woolwich Wanderers classic design that people very much like. And much, much more. Check it out. You'll find details in the show notes of this show. Gentlemen, I think what we are all agreed on is that football-wise, they were better than us on the day. Grit and determination-wise, we actually beat them because, you know, if they'd have matched us for that, they'd have won the game. So we came through, and through a combination of shithousery and stickability and no little skill. I mean, I thought Harry Kane's header was great. I thought Højbjerg's shot was great for his goal. But it was slightly unexpected, I think. I thought we were going to go there and have a football game with them and maybe prevail on that basis. We prevailed on a different basis. Having seen that, Simon, you've seen all these away games over all these years. We've all been watching this club for decades. Are your feeling? I don't know how optimistic you were generally about this season before that game, but how are your feelings about the season affected either way by that performance?
Not really, because I think that they're still a top four club. They won Champions League a year and a half ago. They've got some great players. It's a ground we never do well at. We rarely go there early in the season. So I think that it was a massive test. And I think that what the bench showed is that I think our bench was a lot stronger than theirs, which I don't remember in recent history when that's been the case. I think all our changes were positive and affected the game in a positive way. I don't think theirs did necessarily. So, yeah, I think that the big question for me is how tied Conte is to that starting 11 that finished at Norwich and finished at Southampton and started yesterday. I'd like to see him mix it up. I think we've got the next couple of games are on paper a lot easier. And I'd love to see a couple of changes in the team. And yeah, I think, look, I went into the season hoping for top four and expecting silverware. That hasn't changed at all, to be honest.
What about you, Dominic?
No, I think I try to be cautiously optimistic anyway. And I think there was a lot of talk that because a few pundits tipped us to be finishing third, it seemed that some people were getting carried away with thinking that suddenly we were challenging City and Liverpool, when I was still realistically thinking that actually the teams around us that we're fighting against are the teams, however they're doing right at the moment, but Arsenal and Man United and West Ham and whoever else is going for the top four places, and that realistically we weren't going to be challenging for the title, although it's always nice to get overexcited before the start of the season, as we all do every year. But I still think that the season, when you look at the results so far, we've won and drawn games that last season we lost both. We lost to Southampton at home and we lost at Chelsea. So we're 4 points ahead, match on match, from last year. Yeah. And there's certainly, I think, points that we're going to need to claw back against the mid-table sides, because I can't see we're going to get 8 points against Liverpool and Man City this season like we did last season.
Yeah.
But I still think we're going in the right direction.
There's still rumours flying around, you know, online, and there's still 3 weeks, well, 2 weeks left of this transfer window. There's still rumours flying around. Can you see us getting anyone else in, Carl?
I think we've had a brilliant transfer window. I think we've easily had an 8.5 out of 10 transfer window. I think you look at the pre-season he's given them, and you bring a player in after that's missed out on all of that. You know, Jed Spence is maybe being eased in a little bit for joining a little bit later. So I think if there's a, you know, that kind of magic Van der Vaart kind of last minute deal to be had of a player who's really going to change things, fantastic. But I mean, we've been in plenty of transfer windows where we've hoped and that's never materialised. I can't necessarily see. I'd be very surprised if we saw another big player come in. But as the guys have already said as well, I remain optimistic. I mean, it's 4 points that we've picked up from games where we picked up zero last season. We've got with Wolves coming up, that's another 3 points that we dropped last season. So I think we've got enough to be comfortably in the third, fourth place hunt. And I think, you know, Liverpool and City need to have an absolute nightmare they pretty much both need to have a nightmare for us to really be pushing for the league. It's nice to dream, but I'd be very surprised if we were pushing for the title. But picking up points where we lost them last season, if we just keep doing that in a really consistent way, you're going to be in with a chance.
Totally. Simon, do you see any obvious areas where we could do with someone new, or do you think the squad is sufficiently balanced and strong?
I think we've got enough. I mean, listen, Bentancur and Kulusevski last Jan were almost bonuses now. I feel like we'll be spoiled if we bring in any more, to be honest. We've had an incredible calendar year so far. I think the priority of that sort of department of the club has to be getting the remaining three out. And that's probably a job in itself. I mean, you're reading what various things online about. Well, you don't need to read online, do you? I think Ndombele and Winks are probably proving quite hard. And I imagine both will go on loan last day, and we'll unfortunately picking up most of tab. So I think that's probably the focus of that function of the club. But I think we've got a really good squad now. And as I said, I think I'm really excited about Richarlison, and I'm interested to see how Conte manages Son, Kane, Richarlison, and even Moura, because I think Son hasn't had a good couple of games. Personally, I'd give Richarlison a start at the weekend, but that's not a slate on Son. That is just the reality of a club challenging on all fronts.
Yeah, it's been a long time since Son didn't start a game. I mean, people forget now that it took him quite a long time to settle in, didn't it? His first season and a half, really two seasons, he wasn't a regular starter at all. And I think it was the end of his, I don't know if it was his first or second season, where he actually wanted to go. He said, I want to go because I don't think I've succeeded here and I'm not getting anywhere. Lamella was being preferred to him for quite a long time, for example, which seems absolutely bizarre now, doesn't it? I mean, my God. But
what are your thoughts on that? I mean, is that controversial?
It's funny, you know, you look at the performances and you think, yeah, I mean, just purely on merit, take away all the names, which is what you need. You take away all the names and all the CVs and all the reputations, and you think, yeah, looking at the playing personnel, yeah, I mean, it'd be perfectly fair enough to start Richarlison, especially as in a game like, I mean, we'll talk about the next game in a separate podcast, which will come out later in the week. But I think generally speaking, I think that Son is, I don't think it would be a controversy, apart from the fact that he is a world famous superstar, which he is, isn't he? He's the most famous man best footballer Asia's ever produced and the most famous man in Korea and all that. And a fabulous player, of course, when he's firing on all cylinders. The funny thing about Son, though, he can have a bad 60 minutes in a game and then score two and make one at the end, can't he?
That's the thing. We've got to change his mindset. You know, Grealish isn't starting for City.
Yeah.
And he comes on and does a job. Like, we just got to... And the players need to understand that it's not a slant on them. It's just... It's how it's going to be.
And I think as well that the five substitution rule this season makes a big difference to that, because if you do get a couple of injuries during the game and have to force changes, that doesn't rule out. That doesn't mean that the star player who's perhaps been rested for that game is thinking, well, that's really leaving me with a slim opportunity to get on. When you've got the five changes, you can have a couple of forced changes and still make some other changes during the game.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got Son on the bench. Bring him on with 20 minutes to go. It'd be an absolutely petrifying prospect for the opposition.
But I think after yesterday, you could say the same about Richarlison as well, though, because that felt like a plan B. That felt like actually we could have two up front and really kind of, I mean, you know, to our detriment, then we were almost 4-2-4 at the actual when we conceded the second goal, and I think that Sonny was about to go, and he was caught quite out of position, but I also think Højbjerg was dragged way too far across as well, you know. So that, but Richarlison was involved in winning the free kick where James takes Kane down, you know. Yeah. Richarlison at that point, we've resorted to obviously just giving it a little bit of a lump. There was something of Ajax in the final minutes about it, actually. And Richarlison kind of gets involved, keeps it alive, gets it out wide. We win the foul, and obviously, you know, he played a big part in that.
Absolutely. That was the start of the first and only really sustained spell of pressure we had on their goal. And, of course, we end up scoring. It's quite such a funny old... It was a crazy game because, you know, as we keep saying, sophisticated coaches, multi-million pound squads, you know, state-of-the-art football. And yet you look at some of the things that happened. I mean, after we scored, like we've already said, the drinks break happened. You know, it all goes a bit mad. They score. They've got a free man, completely spare man on the right-hand side. That business of Loftus-Cheek, you know, I said earlier he started a wing-back. But, of course, what they are actually doing is they were sort of transitioning between a 4 and a 5 and or a 3 and a 4, whatever you want to call it, because Loftus-Cheek was coming in. It was almost like they cheated a bit because they had him playing. He was a midfielder, very often playing in midfield, wasn't he? But then you look at things like their goal. I mean, their first goal, Koulibaly. He had a cigar while he was waiting for the ball to drop out of the sky. You see, what's going on? At any level, you'd be screaming at the manager. We go, for Christ's sake, he's had half an hour to shape himself for that shot. And then you look at our goal at the end, Kane. It's the most simple goal at any level in the world. I mean, brilliant header, great corner. But still, nevertheless, you've been done at a corner from a header. I mean...
I think that the thing with Koulibaly was that because he had three shots in the first half, he had one either side of the goal that he scored, the volley. He had one from outside the box where we left him unmarked. And that might have been a consequence of the fact that it was his debut and no one really knew much about him. So perhaps teams won't allow him that sort of space around the box. And we maybe thought, well, he's just a big centre-back. He's unlikely to volley one into the top corner.
Yeah.
And maybe in subsequent weeks, other coaches will have maybe found that out about him.
Yeah, I mean, one of the pundits, I can't remember which one it was going absolutely crazy about the zone. I mean, most top teams now do zonal marking. When it first came along, all the English pundits would go, this is a load of nonsense. You've got to have one man each. Then you know what you've got to do. Everyone knows their job. But now, slowly, everyone does zonal marking. But sometimes they pick out, and you look at, you know, the way Chelsea were set up for those corners. There's a whole load of Tottenham players in various sections of the six-yard box, and there's no Chelsea players there. And then
and also there was nobody on the posts.
Yeah.
Which is a bit frustrating.
The oldest of old chestnuts.
Yeah.
No one on the post for our goal either.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and people say, just put someone on the post, they don't score it. You know.
Yeah.
And that stuff I find hilarious and interesting because they're all the sophisticated coaches, they ditch that stuff. And then you find after all the sophistication, all the analytical stuff, it's just the same old things. It's bloody hilarious, really. But it just shows you need a bit of everything, don't you, to prevail and to win. As I said, gentlemen, we will return later in the week, if that's all right with you guys, for a full preview of the Wolverhampton Wanderers game. But I think for now, I'm exhausted all over again talking about it now from having lived through it. But I think we're all very pleased with that last minute equaliser and that creditable point at Stamford Bridge. So we'll park it there. Simon and Dominic and Carl, thank you all so very much. And I'll see you later in the week for this Wolves game. Theo Delaney signing off saying, come on you Spurs.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.